The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
Hello and welcome to another live, exciting episode of the Comic Book Chronicles.
Woo! Yeah.
One hand clapping.
I am your host for tonight, Roddy Cat. And with me tonight, we have coming back from his sojourn into Fantastic Meats, one PCN underscore dirt.
Fantastic Meats.
Yeah, you went to We had unlimited shrimp last week.
Right? Oh, right. I was like, what are you talking about?
I got a thing here. Roll with me.
Okay. All right. I got you. Yeah, I ended up mid-30s in the shrimps.
That's actually not bad.
Yeah. You know, I nowhere close to the 100 I was going to go for, but, you know, it was Outback Steakhouse. So you also had this big, thick steak. So, you know.
Right. So you were kind of hindered. I got you. Oh, that's the kind of thing. It's like, oh, whenever they're promising like unlimited whatevers, it's like, okay, you got to plan around it.
Right.
But they always give you extra stuff to go with.
Oh, and so here's a giant baked potato.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, have this whole heaping extra thing of mashed potatoes while you're at it. And
potatoes cost a nickel a pound. Here, eat a bunch of these before we give you any shrimp.
Exactly.
Right.
And a bunch of rolls. And hey, you want a blooming onion? You know you do. That's why
you're
here.
Those are some good rolls. Yeah. Whenever they have the big bread. Yeah. All right.
And been out back in a minute. Which hopefully, hey, maybe they'll sponsor us after this. We don't know.
Outback Steakhouse.
But in the meantime, so we have a rotating cast this week. As you do not hear at the moment, who will be joining us shortly. The sound effects guy, the man, the myth, the legend, our Captain America, who is apparently coming back from opening a place where you can get some fantastic treats. One agent underscore 70.
Oh, wrong one. There you go.
That's fine. Either way, he works. There you go. That was a perfect one. And also who will be joining us, a regular host, Tim, who is enjoying some fantastic beats and some fantastic beats, hopefully, with his lovely wife, and she'll be with us at some time. Yeah. But until all that pops off, we have a pretty decent week this week. We've had a couple of good weeks of a lot of stuff. This one's kind of not as much. So we're going to start getting into some comic book reviews. But before we do that, because I almost always forget this, you can find all of us at, you can find me at Roddy Cat on Twitter. You can find me also at News Nerds Need on Twitter. You can find PCN underscore dirt at PCN underscore dirt.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, I know, right? And at Pop Culture Net. I guess until they finally kill it, you're still on Vine doing Vine
reviews? I'm still on Vine until they shut it down, but I'm also posting on Instagram now. I've seen Graham Comic Reviews on Instagram, so you can check them out there.
Oh, nice. Since
they're cross-posting to Vine, I'm keeping the Vine six-second format, but once Vine actually shuts down, I might expand them a little bit. I haven't quite decided.
Yeah. Or did they expand that?
I don't know. Instagram, nowadays, they might do like a half hour. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's on nowadays, especially when they add the stories. So, right. So yes, everybody, check that out. And actually, you can also check my other Instagram account at CBC Caps, where I just do screen caps of panels I like and make a little bit of nonsense. And apparently, Ms. Jonah's thing is wrong, because there is no such thing as Italy.
Is that what you said?
Italy, not Italy. There is Italy.
Oh, Bitly.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Weird. You can also find Agent 70 at Agent 70 on Twitter. You can find him at Instagram at Agent underscore 70. And, of course, you can find our Tim at TimDog98 on Twitter and at CBCron and also at TheClickNation on Twitter. You go there. We're all there. It's a wonderful time. You can find the podcast at, well, you can find us on YouTube as you're watching us now, probably. You can also find us after the fact at cspn.us. You can subscribe to the podcast using bit.ly/cbcronpod. That'll take you directly to the iTunes link. And you can also shop for fine CSPN merchandise like the Comic Book Chronicles at shop.cspn.us.
I hear we're also on SoundCloud, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. Is that what it is?
That is absolutely correct. I think we're also on TuneIn. I'm not sure about that one.
There you go. Think,
yeah, TuneIn may not be the place it used to be.
But, it's either TuneIn or it's iHeart. I don't remember which one.
It's probably both. Yeah. I didn't know iHeart had podcast support. So I thought they were just strictly radio, but that's probably at this point.
I think Classic set it up as a streaming radio that just plays the podcast like talk shows, like radio.
Oh, sweet! Yeah,
plays them over and over.
Yeah, I was going to do that on Mixcloud or one of those places one time, but it ended up being an issue.
Yeah.
So
anyway,
but now that we got that all out of the way, let us get to this week's comics. And I do believe we said we were going to start with Trinity number 3.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. So what did you think about this one, sir?
I thought it was okay. I mean, it wasn't great. The story's been at least intriguing. We knew something was up. There was some sort of hallucinogen involved or something, alternate timeline maybe. You know, you weren't really sure. But we found out last issue that they are actually kidnapped by Poison Ivy, and they're under her control, caught in some sort of chemical coma. And so it's been focusing on like the fears and the insecurities of the characters. And this issue was focusing on Batman and, you know, the death of his parents and everything like that. And, you know, it was fine. My big problem with the way the story's been going so far is that the issues are interesting, but the actual story in the real world is taking so long to get anywhere.
Right.
Because it feels like technically it's been maybe 10 minutes. Since they fell into this coma, and we're now on issue 3, you know, because they're spending all of that time in their hallucination and not much has happened in the real world. We finally get some sort of movement at the end of this issue, which, you know, I don't want to spoil, but it's just one of those things where it's like, okay, at the end of the last issue, I knew what was going on. So it's like, okay, let's go ahead and, you know, start working through it. And instead it just kind of meandered again for another issue.
Right. Well, yeah. Excuse me, yeah, because you get the sense, because like the first issue started with them all coming together, and then the last issue was Superman's part of it, so you know we're going to get Wonder Woman's next issue, as it actually said at the end of this book. So you know they're going to have to go through the motions, but it seemed like to me, didn't at the end of the last issue we saw Starro?
I don't think so. It was just Poison Ivy.
Yeah, I mean, I know we saw Poison Ivy and we saw a bunch of plants around it, but I could have sworn like we saw I had to go back and look. Like, we saw, like, a star looking. Maybe it was just a plant that kind of reminded me of Starro. Because the whole vibes are kind of reminded me of the For the Man Who Has Everything type of situation. So maybe it was a thing just like, well, maybe it's not just Poison Ivy, and maybe it's just a couple other people coming together. You just see her here now. Because she seemed like a weird one to take on all three.
I did get the feeling that she was working with somebody else. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember it actually saying anything of who the other person is, but maybe not. Maybe I'll have to go back and look a little more closely.
I don't think it did either, because as a matter of fact, because even in this issue, you see some things that kind of, like you see a couple of, well, you see at least one other person show up in one form, but you also see something else that kind of makes it seem like there is another person, like another, basically a bat villain involved,
yeah.
or at least two bat villains involved.
So,
but then again, like one of them could have been because of the hallucination, so.
Right. So, yeah, but again, like I said, it's taking a while to get there. And this one, is this one every 2 weeks? Or is this a monthly?
I think this is a monthly.
Yeah, and maybe that's part of the problem, too, is with so many of their books being every 2 weeks, they can meander a little bit, but you're still getting, you know, 40 pages a month. So right. It feels like you're getting more story, whereas this one being monthly makes it feel that much slower to get anywhere.
Which is a weird thing with a couple of monthly books I've noticed, because it's like, oh, wait, that's out. And it does seem like, wow, this is taking a minute, because yeah. We do have a lot more books now that are, you know, bi-weekly. So that's a strange one.
So like I said, it was all right. It just, yeah. I didn't think it was great. I didn't think it was terrible, but I thought it was decent, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely, like you said, intriguing, and which has been the whole thing with this book with me so far, and I hope it does stay that way, and the art's been pretty good as well.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping it kind of it keeps up that way, because like I said, I'm, you know, my foray into DC in the past year or so has been pretty decent, and this is kind of hopefully continuing that.
Yeah.
But let us move on. I guess we get down to the DC train. Oh, wait. And Tim says, by the way, nice Clayman art. Speaking of, our Trinity is still re-inspirationing to Plaz. It's this time it's Batman's turn, which is, you know, pretty much what we've been talking about. Yeah. The weird thing about it, so there is this part I will spoil just a little bit, because I kind of alluded to it already. I just thought about this. There's one part where we see Harleen Quinzel during the course of the hallucination, and this is just a side note with me. I just every time I see Harley or her, you know, or her, I guess, quote unquote, a normal look or whatever.
Yeah, you want to say her alter ego, but it's not really. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I always read it in Arlene Sorkin's voice, which is weird because, like I said, in this issue, she was just strictly a psychologist, and that's kind of a weird read the way, you know,
right,
to read her as Harley Quinn, you know. But it's just weird that that happens. But I enjoy it. Anyway, so let us move on. Like I said, the DC train, I guess. You wonder, what else have you read DC-wise?
Well, see, I read Aquaman.
Oh, go for it.
Yeah, actually, I got caught up on this series this week. So basically what's been going on is that there's some secret organization that Black Manta has taken control of that is trying to start a war between the United States and Atlantis. And so they've tried a couple things so far in the series, and it hasn't worked. Last issue, Mira, or maybe it was two issues ago, I guess, Mira got a prophecy from some ancient Atlantean sorceress, oracle, whatever, that basically said that if she were to stay involved with Aquaman, that would bring about the end of the world. And so she's like, okay, well, obviously that's false. You know, it's not going to happen, whatever. And then things have started happening that, of course, follow the prophecy. So she's in a position now where she thinks, if I stay here, I'm going to be part of the reason the end of the world comes. If I break it off and go away, then that'll stop the end of the world from coming. But, of course, at the same time, Black Manta is trying to create this war, and so she feels continue to stay and fight and stop you know, the United States from thinking that Atlantis is attacking them and retaliating. So it's built up a very interesting balance you know, between Aquaman's story of fighting this war and Mira's story of being kind of caught in the middle of it and having her own subplot going on about whether or not she, you know,
her fighting a prophecy.
Right. And so this is another book. This is one of the twice a month books that it really helps that it comes out so often because it is one of those stories where it builds so well. You know, just it's the stories are one and done enough that if you were, you know, 10 years old and you just got one issue, you would get enough of a story that, you know, something happens and it's resolved at the end of the issue. But at the same time, there are enough subplots that go through the stories. It seems, you know, really well laid out as everything's happening. And it's also one of those books where something that happened like in issue 2 is referenced in issue 9, and something that happened in issue 4 is referenced in issue 11, you know. So you can tell that the building is the overall plan. Like, right. It's not just keep going because we have to keep going, that Dan Abnett has actually, you know, figured something out. The only downfall really in the series is just that because it's every 2 weeks, it rotates artists, and some artists are a little bit better than others, you know. But, I mean, that's just, you have that on all the books, so.
Sure.
But, yeah, it was good. It's another, you know, very solid book. It's one of those, actually, I'm thinking about dropping Daredevil from my pull list, and I may be adding Aquaman.
Okay. Spot,
so. I enjoyed it.
Okay. Do you get the sense from the mirror part that maybe somebody's behind that, or somebody could be behind that? Like, or there's
no, well, let's see. How to explain? There's basically the way it's one of those things where the prophecy is written using some general nautical terms, and there are certain groups that have taken those nautical terms for themselves. For instance, there's a terrorist group called the Deluge. So this prophecy talks about the deluge that comes, and it's like, okay, well, is that talking about an actual oceanic event, or is it talking about this terrorist group that comes? But the reason why the terrorist group took the name of Deluge was because of the prophecy. So it's like, are they fulfilling the prophecy, or are they, you know, trying to self-fulfill the prophecy by taking the name on themselves, you know? Right. So it's, you can't really be certain that what's happening is really what's happening, but there are enough coincidences to make her freak out. So that makes it fun.
I gotcha. Okay. That sounds cool, actually. I might by looking at Aquaman. I hadn't read Aquaman since I was little.
Yeah, I read the first few issues, and I was like, this is, you know, pretty good, but it was just more of Aquaman versus Black Manta. You know, the first few issues was just, you know, more fighting between them, and I'm like, well, I've seen this before.
Sure.
But apparently that was just so they could remind everybody about that whole storyline and then start to grow from that and build on it. So it's worked out pretty good.
Gotcha. All right. So then let's go to, by chance, did you read, well, you said you read Batman.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do that because Tim's got something on that one.
What did Tim have?
Which he says, not sure I like Tom King turning his Bendis with his writing style. Issues are either very wordy or hardly any dialogue. And if there is, characters are repeating themselves. Which I believe that was something y'all mentioned last time we talked about Batman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of the same problem that I'm having with Spider-Man nowadays. And we can talk about Spider-Man, you know, a little later. But it is that...
Wait, which one? Amazing or
Red? Just Miles Morales.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just that you get these issues where... Either it covers a span of 10 minutes because there's a lot of conversation, or it covers a span of 10 minutes because they go into such minute detail of he climbs up the wall, he opens the window, he goes inside, he opens a trunk, he rifles around, he finds a book, he opens the book, he reads the book. You know, it's like that type of stuff is what's happening in this story. So it's, I mean, the story is at least, it's a decent plot where Batman is trying to take out Bane. Bane, Psycho Pirate, and Batman needs Psycho Pirate to fix the mind of Gotham Girl because she's gone crazy after the death of her brother. But in order to get Psycho Pirate, he's got to get through Bane, and of course, he and Bane have this, you know, history. So he's set up basically his own Suicide Squad, his own team of villains, basically to work with him to go in. And in this issue, one of the characters, it looks to be turning traitor against him, and. But it's, again, one of those things where it could be that everyone's just being played, that this is part of the long plan that Batman thinks out anyway, or, you know, that could be whatever. But this is an issue where we got a two-page spread of Ventriloquist and Catwoman climbing through sewer pipes, having a conversation about what it means to be a good guy or a bad guy type of stuff, and whether or not the Ventriloquist dummy is actually an extension of his personality or... if it's a distinct personality or, you know, something like that, which, okay, like, that's, I guess, interesting, but do we really need a two-page spread of them crawling through sewer pipes? You know what I mean? So while the overall plot is interesting, the way it breaks down issue by issue is often not as good as the overall story.
Right, right. Okay.
And gotcha. There's Mr. Ty.
Just coming... from a grand opening event for Pearl River Mart. Welcome back, Pearl River Mart. At Matt Wang 97 was there with me along with a bunch of other friends and classmates, so former classmates, so it was a great time. And I made it back in time for the show.
Indeed. What is Pearl River Mart?
It is an Asian and Chinese goods store. It's it was a kind of a department store for Asian goods back in the day, and it's really reinvented itself now.
Okay,
oh, nice. Yeah, so I noticed you didn't open it as Captain America because you don't see you with your shield and whatnot. So.
I can pick it up. It's not far. Much like Steve Rogers in Winter Soldier, my shield is in the weirdest place in the hallway.
I know, right? I know, right? That was very weird. I'm like,
if you guys remember that, right?
Or in the doorway. That's great.
Exactly. I'm like, you don't have it in a portfolio like Steve Rogers used to have it you know, in the comics. He used to walk around with his shield in a portfolio. You know?
Right.
But yeah, I'm back. I'm glad to be at Matt Wang 97 sends his regards, and lots of people are curious now about the show because, you know, what do you do at a party? You mingle, you schmooze, and you tell them, oh, by the way, my side gig is, you know, co-host of a comic book podcast called the Comic Book Chronicles.
That's why you got to have business cards.
Exactly.
That's also why you got the shield with you. You see this, you know.
Yeah.
Stick them on like post-its, and then you just swing the shield out and have them pick one off.
It sounds like Roddy's doing better, and that's a good thing.
Well, getting there. I'm still got a bit of a cough, but yeah, working it out.
That's good. So. All right, guys. So I haven't had a chance to update the sheet. What books have you gone through so far?
So right now we've only done Trinity and Batman.
And Aquaman.
Okay, so you stuck to DC. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So if you have a DC, you want to get out of the way while we're here?
No, unfortunately, I did not get to the interview because I'm trying to catch up on Trinity, and I know you guys like that series, and I'd like to catch up on that, but I haven't had a chance yet. So I'm mostly stuck to Marvel this week, but for one Boom book.
It'll be a good handoff here in a few minutes then, because I've read mostly DC, and I think I read one Marvel book anyway. So
okay,
so we'll be good.
Yep. And on that, by chance, did you read Superman 11?
Of course, I read Superman 11.
Well, let's get to that.
I mean, come on.
So Tim has also read it, and he says, "Very fun. Superman and Batman send Superboy and Robin off to fend for themselves to build up trust and friendship."
Right. You know, it's one of those where the story it set out to tell, it told. It's just a very simple, like, here are the two kids. They're being thrown into the situation, so they have to learn to work together. And, of course, they don't work together. So they get thrown a monkey wrench, so they have to work together, and they don't work together. And they get thrown another monkey wrench, so they have to work together, and they don't work together. And, you know, it's really just about the boys being boys and always competing and not wanting to get along and, you know, just trying to work towards the end. It's a very simple, you know, kind of classic story. The problem is zero subplots. Like, there was absolutely nothing else other than the story of the two boys running through their things. So, like, on the one hand, it's fine for telling the story it set out to tell, but all the Superman books so far have been built on this weaving of subplots between the different books and between these different characters and, you know, mysteries upon mysteries and stuff unfolding between the different titles. And this book had absolutely nothing. It was just the two boys out there trying to, you know, get to the end to prove themselves. So on the one hand, I enjoyed it for the fun little story it was. But on the other hand, I was kind of disappointed when I got to the end because it didn't deal with any of the other 11 billion things that have been going on in the background of the super books since Rebirth started.
Gotcha, gotcha. Do you get the sense that they are going to get, well, clearly they're going to get to a place, you know, I guess some come to some understanding like their dads did, but, you know.
Oh, the two boys working together?
Yeah.
I think at this point, it started out because Damian, of course, doesn't want to be forced to work with Jonathan. And so, you know, he just resents them being forced together that way. But the way it's starting to build now is a kind of one-upmanship that is going to keep them together just because they're always going to be trying to outdo each other. And I think that's really where the relationship's going to build from there.
Yeah, that seems kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it was fine for the story that it told. I just, although to be fair, I mean, there are, I think, six Superman family books right now. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of subplots and a lot of places that things can play out. So they don't necessarily have to be in everything, but just a little disappointing with all these different books that you keep getting all these mysteries and then suddenly they forget all about them for an issue, you know?
Yeah. Gotcha. Gotcha. So I know you're going to have to hop out of here. Excuse me. In a little bit.
Well, let me jump real quick then to one I want to get to. Cave Carson has a cybernetic eye, volume two or number two, whatever. I really enjoy this book. I didn't know until just a little while ago that Cave Carson is actually an old character from the Silver Age, who's basically been forgotten.
No kidding.
And so he's been brought back for this. He was actually...
Was it another publisher like that
thing? No. He was in the Challenger of the Unknown books.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So he and Rip Hunter were the two characters that grew out of the Challenger of the Unknown titles.
I see.
But he was forgotten. He, you know, had some stuff in the Silver Age and then faded away when things rebooted and neck.
So he's actually not the Sentry. I gotcha.
Right. Yes. Jack Kirby didn't create him one night drunk in a bar and forget all about him for 40 years. Right. So, so the way the story is actually written, it's about a guy who used to be a hero who went on all these adventures and has now retired and is working for the company that bought all his technology and is now using it for other applications. So he's gone from being the adventurer to the guy who sits in the office and thinks about the old days. So then finding out that he actually had old days, you know, makes it a little more interesting. But one of the fun things about this book is that he somehow, over the years, has become best friends with Wild Dog. And if Wild Dog is another somewhat forgotten DC superhero, he was basically their version of Punisher. He was a guy who wore a white hockey mask and a, I think it was like a blue hockey jersey and had machine guns.
He is. He's on Arrow now.
Okay. Yeah. See, I don't watch the shows. So,
yeah.
But yeah, he was another one that was forgotten for a long time. And so they've become friends over the years. And so now they're being drawn back together because somebody is trying to kidnap Cave Carson's daughter to somehow get technology from him and some of the knowledge that he knows about certain things in the world. And so the two of them are working together to rescue his daughter. And that's the core of the story that's going on here. But the interplay between them, plus we've got some characters who you're not really sure, like the guy who owns the company where Cave Carson works, you're not sure if he's trying to be a good guy and he's meddling in the middle and causing problems, or if he's actually part of the conspiracy against him. You know, you're not 100% sure how some of that stuff plays out. So they're doing a pretty good job of balancing some of those questions as the story goes. The artwork, Michael Oeming, just has that great classic superhero style to him. It's not flashy. Mm-hmm. It's not overtly cartoony. It's kind of a good spot in between. And so altogether, the book is just a really nice mesh of playing an homage to those Silver Age characters and also updating for the modern day without everything getting lost. It's not like the MacGyver TV show that's back on TV where you watch it and you're like, yeah, it's got the same name, but absolutely nothing in common. You know, this is playing upon all the strengths of the Silver Age stories and then just making it into the modern day. And it works well with the story and the artwork. The artwork also, has that feel of that classic comic book style, just with a more modern, a little more cartoony look to it. So this is my click of the week, actually. All the stuff that came out, I really enjoyed this one a lot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So definitely worth picking up and checking out, and especially because it's only two issues in. It'd be real easy to get caught up on.
Right. The weird Silver Age tie, that's interesting, especially when you mentioned Rip Hunter, who's also on TV. Well, was on TV because he's right. Lately.
I was going to ask, is it a limited series? Do we know how long this is? Is it proposed as an ongoing?
As far as I know, it's an ongoing within the Young Animal imprint, but gotcha. Who knows how long the imprint will last.
Right. Understood.
I suspect they're putting something behind it, so it'll probably be here a minute.
Yeah. All right.
So are you about to buy out? You got anything else you want to? Did you read Cyborg by chance?
I did. I like the story a lot more than the artwork in the last half of the book.
Oh, no.
It switches artists halfway through the book.
Okay.
And the first half is okay, and the second half is like really cartoony and really overtly abstract.
Okay.
Almost in a, I don't want to say Teen Titans Go kind of way, but it's just really.
Yeah, I was about to say that's kind of extreme.
Yeah, but it's extreme in that sense, but not in that style. I guess is a good way to put it. So it really throws you off about halfway through the book. Mm-hmm. The story is at least interesting. Someone else has died or is on the verge of dying, and the cyborg process will save her. But Cyborg's father had vowed to never do it again, but now he's been captured, and there's someone else, a shapeshifter, that has taken his place and is going to allow this to happen. So we may be seeing the birth of a new female villain version of Cyborg coming out of this, and we don't know who's actually behind it all. So it's building a nice mystery behind it, but man, that switch in artwork just really, like, halfway through the book, you're just like, oh my gosh, what is this? What happened? Like, I almost expected it to be like, oh, his eye sockets are breaking down and the universe looks wrong. Nope, they just switch artists. So,
Wow.
It really throws you out of the book. Like, it is not anywhere close. If it was the same artist all the way through, I'd be a little disappointed, but I'd, take it a little bit better. But the fact that it just... you get to like page 12 and it just switches and that's it. It's just like, ugh. So.
Right. So is that the subscription cover?
No, this is the regular cover. That's the alternate.
Okay.
Yeah, you've got the alternate.
Okay. Didn't I know?
Yeah, if you look at the barcode here, here's a quick.
Right, you mentioned it before. I didn't pay any attention to it.
All right, so everybody watching at home, go to your barcode and these last three digits down here at the bottom. This middle one where it says this is a 2 because mm-hmm. this is the alternate cover. If it had a 1, it'd be the regular cover. And as you go through the books, the more covers there are, that can go up and it can cause havoc with all these numbers. But that's the easiest way to tell right there is look at that digit.
If it's not a 1, it's an alternate cover or a variant cover.
Right. Gotcha.
Like this is the variant cover where we're about to move over to Marvel. This is the variant cover for the Uncanny X-Men Annual #1, Domino. And And obviously, it does say variant at the top. But if you didn't need, if you didn't see that, you go to the barcode.
Yep. Yeah, sometimes they'll have books that are labeled like B or C. Sometimes, well, some people do, not all of them. Like I think IDW does that on some a lot of their books.
Yeah, DC hasn't been doing it with these because all of the variants are open order, which means that there's no restrictions on them. If a store wanted to, they could only order the variants and not order any of the regular covers. But, you know, people just get into the habit of whichever one they buy, they want to keep buying those. So most people bought the A covers, so we order probably 2-3 or 1-2 ratio of the regular to the variant. So variants, we, you know, we have 2/3 or half the number of the regular covers on those. But we try to split it up to make sure we have them available because there will be people that buy both all the time. So, all right, I do got to get going. I pushed it a little too far. I'm getting some dirty looks. So.
Uh-oh.
No problem. Push up, sir.
It's my turn to put the tie on and head out. But
there you go. I'm glad I caught up with your dirt before you had to go.
All right, I'll see you guys next week.
Have a good one.
All right, take it easy. All right, and as dirt pops off, and we still have myself and Agent 70. So, what have you got for us, sir?
As we shift over to Marvel.
Sure, because I have no more DC books.
All right. So, how about I take a quick peek at what you read this week before I go into what I'd like to talk about. How about Captain America Sam Wilson number 15?
Yes. Let's
and the retconning galore in this. So I read this today and I had to do a double take. Uh-huh. Double take.
You mean about
a certain D-Man who is the focus of the book. Now, just to give people an idea of what this book about what happens in this book,
this is a one and done.
Yeah, it's definitely a fill-in issue,
if you will.
I wouldn't say fill-in issue because I think what it does is it's kind of a team building issue, sort of. Because what we've established is we center on Sam Wilson, Captain America, and his partner, the newly minted Falcon. Right, and this is, I forget the character's actual name, but his code name is Falcon. And I thought one of the funniest things on the second page of the book is that they're going into a pretty good, you know, what looks like a light boxed drawing of Madison Square Garden here in New York City, and they're going to attend a professional wrestling match. And this is a huge callback, yes. Right? It's a huge callback to when we're first introduced to Dennis Dunphy, D-Man, and the UCW. It was huge, storyline in the 80s with the Power Broker, and so many characters spun off that.
And they bring us up.
Right. And they do mention that. And they also bring in a 90s character, right? And they seem to integrate him into the storyline and make him, I guess, another... not a primary character, but a recurring character at least, and that's Rage. I'm not spoiling anything because if you've been reading this, Rage has appeared a couple of times. So, as Roddy said, let me ring the spoiler bell because now we're really getting into spoiler territory. So, as Roddy said, D-Man is wrestling here. He was one of the headline characters. I remember Ben Grimm was the champion of the UCW for I don't know how long, but right. D-Man, I guess, was a big time wrestler, and
apparently 4-time intergalactic champion.
Yeah, I totally don't remember any of that stuff.
Yeah.
But the art threw me because the big retcon in this made me like flip back and forth between pages. And I'm like, was that what I think just happened?
Are you referring to...
Yeah, because basically they out D-Man in this.
Right.
They completely take him out of the closet. And I had no idea that this was in the mix. I don't know if this...
But then again, we haven't, in the course of this book, in the course of, I guess, however long D-Man has been in this book, yeah, we don't really get a sense of it. Because the most time we've seen him, he's been, you know, behind the scenes in costume, you know, kind of being tech support. Well, right. Not tech support, kind of being a support person for Sam.
Right. And honestly, and I think I've made this joke before, I think the last time I really remember reading anything of note about Dennis Dunphy was when he was a homeless guy and he was kind of out of it during the Kurt Busiek, George Perez Avengers, and he was like a running gag because he lived with the homeless people in Lowtown in the sewers, I believe that's what it was called.
Yeah, and a couple of times they would bring him in on Avengers movie, Avengers meetings and, you know...
Right,
everybody they would make sit away from him
exactly because he smelled, and it was just, you know, and that's what I remember him as. So it was a big shock for me, because then I went to Wikipedia to see, all right, when did they refer to this at all, ever? What part of the story did I miss?
Well, actually, he did mention, when he was talking part way through the story, mentioned about him being there. It means, you know, because basically he talks about the charity that they're wrestling for, right. And he's talking about, it was like, I've been there, basically, and as a nod to that.
Right. Oh, no, yeah, but what I'm talking about now is the development with D-Man coming out of the closet.
Sure.
And I was, you know, as I was saying earlier, it was just kind of out of the blue. And, you know, it was a weird retcon, because it seemed like a weird spot to just spring it on you. But I guess this is a D-Man centric issue. What better place to reveal that?
Well, and other thing is, I don't think we have ever, like, even in initial runs of him being in Captain America, have ever seen him with anybody anyway.
That's true.
So I don't think, like, they could have just thrown this in there for, not saying they just threw it in there, but, you know, I assumed it was brought up for just for reasons, you know, because, hey, this is the world we live in now. So that's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
So,
I don't think there's lots of fans of Dennis Dunphy that are going to balk
at this character development. Which is kind of my point. Exactly. Yeah. Like, you and I know who he is and know the history of him to a certain point, but it's like, nobody's like, even the fact that, you know, he was in this
book, that
this was a him centric book issue, had me like, oh, really? Because, I mean, I was like, D-Man was what it was back in the day, and that whole UCW thing just kind of, I kind of wish Dirt and Tim was in it, because they would probably, I don't know if Tim, wait a minute, did Tim say he read this one? He did not. So, because I was curious to be, yeah, curious to get their, being wrestling fans,
right,
their take on this, if they had read it or not, which it doesn't seem like they may have, I don't know. Well, because this is more of a more wrestling-focused book or issue with a message behind it, and focuses on D-Man, who is the very epitome of a D-list character.
Right. And what's funny about that is that the other message that I think they were trying to get across, that was primarily given through the wrestling, was part of like an inner monologue that D-Man has, because the opponent that he's wrestling in this charity event is none other than Battlestar, the bold urban commando partner of John Walker, Lamar Hoskins.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly couldn't remember the last time I saw this character either.
Exactly. Which was the thing about, like, Nick Spencer, between Nick Spencer and, he's writing Ant-Man too, isn't he?
Yes.
So between him and, like, Hopeless, they've been pulling out some deep cuts.
Yeah.
Here and there, and I was like, wow. It was like, Spencer's just bringing out all kind of old stuff. Like, like ridiculousness.
Right. And so, the message, and without spoiling too much, the message, you know, that was kind of expressed through the wrestling, you know, there's a couple of different messages. One was, you know, like, you know, how different wrestlers kind of get their shine and how, you know, that's expressed. And how, you know, the show that they put on and the act that they put on, you know, is meant to, you know, entertain, but also, you know, sell a story and tell a message sometimes. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they're actually able to jump into action at some point later and kind of put aside the differences to do good, you know, is another message.
Right. Which mirrors the one that, speaking of Rage and Sam.
Right.
Kind of mirrors that, which I guess was the whole purpose, was probably the overall purpose of this issue outside of, you know, that, and a slightly more global message of being like, you know what, because even Sam said, like, you know, looking throughout the crowd, you see people of different races and all kinds of stuff, but they're all coming together for this one event, you know, just for this thing. And, you know, there's so basically, no matter how bad the world gets, there's always something that could bring us together type of situation.
Right. You know,
which I thought was a good message, you know.
Sure. You know,
last one though.
Yeah. Listen, it's fun enough that, you know, and wrestling is popular enough and people are like in on the gag as it is, that you can read this and understand what's going on. I'm familiar enough with wrestling to understand where this was going. So I can definitely tell you that, you know, a lot of this stuff rang very true to some of the inside stories that are out there on how wrestling works.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But, even down to the new ECW manager or owner, whose name is somewhat similar to the current WWE wrestler, which, of course, that's an obvious nod.
Of course.
So, of course. But yeah, I didn't find myself enjoying this book, even with the wrestling stuff. It was like, oh, really? But like, so it was actually a fun read, you know, going to it.
Right. But, you know, it was an entertaining issue. You know, it was nice to see the shine given to, you know, the, like you said, the D-list characters, you know, and basically Samuelson's just watching, you know, as things happen. You know, I don't have all that much else to say about it. It was just a pretty entertaining read, and it took me by surprise. You know, it was kind of full of surprises, and I guess maybe that was part of the fun. All right. I'm checking out Tim's list because I'm spoiling the return of a certain Tim Dog.
Some of the stuff I was gonna say about that the cat book. Oh, that was okay. I should have looked this up. Who was the lady that showed up? Or I guess I don't know. See, that was the thing about it, because they had a dude near the end that was dressed up like the Thing,
right?
But they also had this other female wrestler, and I know I have seen her before, but I couldn't remember her name.
That was I want to say it was like a version of Ms. Marvel.
Sharon Ventura.
Yes, that is Sharon Ventura. Yes, wasn't Ms. Marvel her nom de guerre, as it were?
Maybe. I don't remember, you are absolutely right. I didn't think about that.
Thank you, Google. So she was obviously, yeah, it was Ms. Marvel.
Mm.
She had used the pseudonym Ms. Marvel in that costume when she was part of the UCW.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And then she became the She-Thing later when she was exposed to cosmic rays.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's
I wonder if she's still around. But that I would like to believe that was not her. But anyway, it doesn't matter. It was just something I was thinking about as I was reading it. So, yes, let us move on while we await the, Tim, and I don't see anything that he's read that I've read.
How about? Yeah, I was about to say he didn't read. I'm surprised he didn't read. Did he read Black Panther?
Doesn't look like it.
All right, so we can talk that because that's something we both read.
Mm-hmm. So this is my potential click of the week, or at least one of them.
This was a very interesting read.
Mm-hmm. So here we have, especially in the beginning. So we have, you know, the crew going their separate ways and. And we see them have a moment. You know, we get a sense of why T'Challa chose that particular group, you know, and why Sam Wilson wasn't, you know, wasn't chosen for this group.
Right. For this, the most recent incarnation of or iteration of the crew.
Right. So, and we also get a nice little touching moment with him and, with T'Challa and Aurora.
Yeah. I wonder if they're going to try to rekindle that.
I hope so. I really do. Because I know a lot of people don't like them two together and thought, you know, whatever. But I love them two together. So mm-hmm. I hope so. You know, at least they have been cordial the last few times that they've been in a book together. Maybe.
Well, when they were on opposite sides of the Civil War.
I was about to say, yeah, with the exception of that.
You know. And even the second Civil War, I think they were on the opposite sides, right?
That's true. Yes.
Because Storm other than Civil Wars, I guess they get along.
yeah, you know. So. And even then, they never really kind of, as far as I remember, they didn't like head up with each other. And even though, as a matter of fact, in last week's Power Man and Iron Fist, they showed up in that one big. As a matter of fact, somebody mentioned this on Twitter, but I was speaking of that. So there was this one big 2-page spread, I think it was.
Right.
That when they went to the meeting and they had all the heroes together, I want a print of that because that was a gorgeous, you know, a gorgeous layout by Sanford Green. Of all the heroes being there. And they were in that mix, even though no one really said anything, you know.
Right.
They didn't say anything to each other, but that's, you know, it is what it is. But back to this issue. So we get that moment where and they go off in their separate ways. Eden comes back, who is also part of the crew, and to help T'Challa with his plan to apparently go get Shuri.
And I thought that was the most interesting twist to this.
Mm-hmm.
That was an ingenious use of, or at least expansion of, Eden / Gateway's. He took on the Gateway moniker, right?
Manifold.
Manifold. That's right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he was Gateway's mentor.
Right.
Well, mentee, rather, mentee. Whatever.
But yeah, I forgot that was his code name, Manifold. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing to have Manifold literally teleport across space as he did in Infinity. Like he was a huge part of how the Avengers got around in Infinity.
Yep.
Right. But we see this
kind of made me feel some kind of way during that. Cause it's like, wait, does he mean tell me that's all he is? Is just a door, not a doorman, but just
he's a teleporter.
He's a teleporter.
Well, I mean, come on.
He's a driver, basically.
Yeah. He's the driver. He's the transporter. He's the who's the analog? There's always a mutant analog to this, you know.
Magic.
Yeah,
Magic Pixie. I guess. Wait, was Pixie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nightcrawler in some instances, but
you know, right. Shine, so.
Yeah, whenever there's a teleporter, you know, they always that's pretty much their main thing. But at least we know he can't fight, and he has fought in the last issue, so that's right. You know.
And like that's, I said, it was an interesting expansion and use and interpretation of his power. I give Ta-Nehisi Coates a lot of credit with that.
I feel like they've done something similar in Avengers, but I don't know if that's actually true.
This felt very novel to me, so I'm not sure on that one.
Right.
We gotta get Roddy, we're going to start a GoFundMe page for Roddy Cat to get some Ricola.
I know, right? So my apologies for that, ladies and gentlemen. It has been a ridiculous week. So, I but anyway, yeah, so, and which actually brings up a point, because they mentioned in this, in the midst of the story, is like, T'Challa asks Eden, like, what would he do to get Gateway back? Which, you know, you forget that Gateway was the one that's how they found Eden.
Right.
Through Gateway.
Right.
And, but we don't get a sense of, I don't remember what happened to him. Like, did he get killed in some kind of way or something?
He did. I forget exactly the circumstances, though.
Right. So, and it's like, I remember him being around during, you know, during a good part of later X-Men books, you know, especially after Fall of the Mutants or whatnot.
Right.
I believe that's what it was.
Oh, you mean when you're talking about Gateway, like the introduction of the character? Right. Yeah, they introduced him around Fall of the Mutants when the X-Men moved to Australia, and that's how they got around. They used Gateway to open up, quote-unquote, gateways to get around while the world thought the X-Men were dead.
Right. So I'm going to have to go back and see what happened to that, because every time I see something like that, I'm like, oh wow, that's, I don't remember that happening.
That was a long time ago, Roddy. That was a long time ago.
Those of us of a certain finish.
Exactly. I love that particular phrase has caught on, man. As we were saying, this particular interpretation and expansion of Manifold's powers is very interesting, and we know what the goal of this was. I'm going to ring the spoiler bell just in case you don't want to know. Until you read it. So basically, this is the means that T'Challa uses to bring Shuri back.
Mm-hmm. And we also find out during the course of their journey, which is something I didn't think about, because you get T'Challa's whole monologue during the whole thing about him gaining in his senses during the time of Secret War.
Right.
And I had to think about that for a second. I was like, you know what? He would have, because, I mean, with all the things that's going on, and he had like the Infinity Gauntlet for a good minute, and you know, probably some other things happened. I can't remember. Secret War starting to be a blur now, but you don't think about it. It's like, well, yeah, of course, with the use of all that and everything that happened with the incursions or whatnot, he could have gained some sort of, you know, expansion to his powers,
mm-hmm.
or to, you know, to his senses. So that was interesting to me that they brought that up. I'm like, okay, that was an interesting thing to come out of it. But yeah, so we get the fact that they're going on this journey to get Shuri. Shuri is on the other end of this, in this, I guess, dimension, space, astral plane type of place, where she has been learning knowledge of Wakanda's history and some sense of herself. I thought that this part of the story that they brought up might have been going towards some history of the Dora Milaje.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's actually the case, because the person they bring up seemed like that might have been what they were going for. Maybe not, because we don't know. Or at first, I was thinking like maybe this was like her history, like coming up through her ancestry, you know, up into mm-hmm. Ramonda.
Right.
But we don't know none of this, because none of that has tied together. And we have seen some semblance of powers manifest.
What I was going to say is that what I feel this is actually the history, the founding of the Wakandan nation, the ruling tribe as it is now.
Right. Because what was that?
Right, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, listeners and viewers of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles, tweet at me. If I'm not mistaken, I believe that the tribe that's referenced here, spoiler alert, is the ruling tribe that T'Challa is part of. And this is right. And this is the story of their rise to power, led by this matriarchal figure who, by her spirit, leads the way into the founding of, you know, Wakanda as we know it today, with the tribe that is currently in power.
I believe you're correct.
So that was my understanding, and now what we have is So I think she, so spoiler, like huge spoilers at this point, because I think they're firmly establishing that T'Challa is the sole Black Panther, right? We're not having Shuri as an alternate Black Panther or a second Black, because, right, because the spoiler, the reason why I ring the spoiler bell is that on the last page, this is your chance to get out, people. Fast forward real quick. Because what's revealed on the last page is that Shuri appears to be dressed very much like a Dora Milaje.
And or Midnight Angel, because correct. The Midnight Angel armor is similar to what she has on.
Correct. But the Midnight Angels are supposed to be like the elite Dora Milaje. Is that what it is? I forget.
I don't remember.
Isn't that terrible that we know that there's a difference? We know that
the thing is, the Dora Milaje kind of had their one thing, and the Midnight Angel's armor was kind of a prototype.
It was like something to enhance the Dora Milaje to right.
Like, and it might have been worn by the captain or right. The captains of two, which I mean they still do, but even though the two Dora Milaje that we see during the course of this book have been kind of have gone rogue. But nevertheless, I believe that was the case, and I'm not totally clear on I don't remember that much on that part of it.
Right.
But so yes, we definitely see Shuri back, and looks like she is dressed as personally.
Well, it's about time they wrapped up the story. We're 8 issues into the series. But... I mean, yeah, she's been on the proverbial ice for a long time, you know, since the end of Infinity. Yeah.
Yes. That's so they even mentioned that in the book, you know.
She's been on ice, you know, she's been on ice for a while, so I think that it's about time that we were able to get her back up and running and have her back, you know, because they had established her as a pretty solid character. Mm-hmm. In the wake of, you know, stripping T'Challa of his position. So, you know, to see her kind of frozen like that, I guess it gives T'Challa time to kind of reestablish himself as the king, you know, and not have another Black Panther running around. So now we've got her running around in this, I guess, advanced Dora Milaje getup.
And I suppose now that the fact that they have 2 Black Panther books, she may be possibly running over there. Well, not running over there, but maybe she's over there or splitting the difference between both books. We don't know at this point because, like I said, we know she's back now.
Right.
But we do have the establishment of this other book, which is now has its first arc is having to do with the Midnight Angels that we just mentioned just some seconds ago. And it's going to go into other things. So there's a good possibility that maybe that's going to be her book. We don't know.
That's a possibility.
So, but yeah, like I said, so now that we've established, and the other good thing that I have been loving about this book is the fact that this establishes more and concretes more of Wakanda's history. Because, yeah, we've known things about it in the past, you know, like it is the most technically advanced, but we don't know. We didn't never always get the sense of how it got to that point. Well, we have in certain reasons, but, you know, this is a more concrete history that looks to be shaping up for the book, and I love that this is being established in the book. And like even going so far as to have a map of Wakanda and the surrounding lands and kind of dictating the terms of some of the things that are being expressed in the book. So I am really loving that part about this. So I am actually thinking of getting the trades.
Gotcha.
Of this, just kind of keep and get to some people probably. But
all right.
Been loving it.
Okay, let's see, what else can we talk about that's on everyone's list? So you didn't read any of the Spider-Man books this week?
No, I did not.
So you didn't read the Miles nor the Peter Parker?
I haven't been reading Peter Parker, and well, actually I haven't been reading either one of them to be brutally honest, but
well, what I was going to say is the fun part about the Peter Parker Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, is that we are neck deep in the clone conspiracy stuff. Right. So if you have not caught up yet on the clone conspiracy stuff, do not read this issue. Issue must be read in the wake of the revelations that were revealed at the end or in clone conspiracy number 2. So, you know, shout out to @MattWang97. I just tweeted it out that we were out tonight at the Pearl River Mart grand opening celebration. And we were talking about this book in particular and that he hadn't read it because he had not yet read Clone Conspiracy number 2. And I told him, you must read Clone Conspiracy number 2 first, because this won't make nearly as much sense until you read that. But in this issue, lots of fun. I'm really enjoying, for whatever reason, I seem to really get a kick out of slots. The two most recent events so far, Spider-Verse, I loved. You know, I was the biggest proponent of reading the issues of Spider-Verse on the show.
I remember.
And with Clone Conspiracy, I'm really getting a kick out of reading this. It's just a lot of fun. There's a little bit of Walking Dead in this. You know, that's just a mild, mild spoiler. But it's mild because if you haven't been reading it, you don't really understand where that's coming from.
Sure.
So that being said, again, you know, it's nice that there is an element of Spider-Verse in here because there are multiple Spider characters. It's not just Spidey against the Sinister 55. You know what I mean? It's not just Spidey against the world. There are more than enough Spider-inspired characters running around to you know, make the story move forward, and it just is a lot of fun. You know, I can't express enough how much fun I had reading this. This is an actual candidate for Click of the Week, but with the caveat that obviously I read Clone Conspiracy 2 number two first.
Sure. So I guess this establishes that Web Warriors, I assume, or a version of Web Warriors is still around, being that you said that.
Yes, because just for, you know, without spoiling anything, the Web Warriors series ended not on a cliffhanger, but with more stories to be told. So The concept is still very much in place for them to use going forward.
Gotcha, gotcha.
And Spider-Man number 9, it's a Civil War 2 tie-in. What you see on the cover... the cover is Miles against Space Venom. Is that what it was?
That seems to be the case, yeah.
Right, Space Knight Venom. Oh, I hate to say that. This does not happen in the book. That is not much of a spoiler.
That's a slightly different... No, that's the same cover. Never mind. But that is, I thought it was a slightly different cover than what I've seen, but now it looks like the same one.
No, it's probably just, you know, you're thrown off by the shape. You know, This absolutely does not happen in this book. Sure. The book involves the aftermath of the revelation at the end of Civil War II. I forget what issue it was, but we all know what I'm talking about. The revelation of the vision that Ulysses gave all the heroes of what happens to Hydra Cap at the hands of a certain Miles Morales. And we deal with the aftermath of that, how everyone is in the supporting cast of the Spider-Man book is dealing with what Miles eventually does, because he basically goes off the grid, off radar, to do what he ends up doing, and there is a lot of what happens to Gonke, what happens to Gold Balls, freaking Gold Balls, and what happens to Bombshell, and what Miles' dad is doing, and what the champions are doing. So that's what this issue is. If you are reading Civil War II, this is it's not a necessary issue to fill in the story, but it's helpful.
But it's also another reminder of how much of a bummer Civil War II is. One, the fact that it's not ended.
Right.
And the fact that it was just a general bummer in the first place. But, all right, so let us...
Moving on. So we're running out. We're quickly running out of books that I've read.
Okay, well... Tim's got a few. I got a few.
Okay. So all I've got, I literally only have one more book. So how about you take a few?
Sure. All right. I kind of want to hear his take on that one. So hopefully he'll be here soon for that one. Actually, I don't have that many more myself now that I think about it. And I guess when he gets here, he can talk about that one. But, well, I hadn't read that one either. All right. So let's get to Doctor Strange number 14.
Don't spill too much. Don't spoil too much.
Okay.
Only because I intend to read this like tonight.
Sure. Don't read my notes then.
Okay.
it's not fully spoiler, but you know, I tend to
gotcha.
Be low verbal. So as the last couple of issues has kind of dictated.
Does this happen in the issue? What's on the cover?
not exactly.
Not quite? Okay.
Yeah, not exactly. So, but what we do see is Doctor Strange in getting caught by one of his other enemies, as you see on the cover, Satana's daughter of the devil.
Immediately following the events of last issue.
Correct.
Yeah.
Because that seems to be what this arc is all home week for Doc. So without spoiling anything, Satana's trying to capture Doc for a reason. She has her own version of hell, which she kind of sells to him some kind of, you know, kind of way, and she's trying to get him to do something, which he eventually does, but which causes a predicament that he has to get out of. We see another former WCA villain show up in a interesting way.
You mean at the end of the issue? That's funny.
No. Just throughout this issue.
Okay, I'm just flipping through now.
Yeah, I've been loving Doctor Strange book, and this one has been equally as entertaining by what goes on in it, because what she wants Doc for,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's kind of funny. And the way she sets it up, you know, and they're in this like big diner looking thing, so that the cover does kind of say that point. And there is even a mention, or at least you get to see something about Hell's Kitchen, which is like, well, that makes sense, because if they're in hell and this is a diner, this could mm-hmm. be the real Hell's Kitchen.
No, so. The menu is just pictures of people screaming.
Exactly.
I love it. Can I tell you, just flipping through this, I don't know if you picked up a physical copy of this book yet.
I did. Mm-hmm.
Some of these pages are incredible.
They are gorgeous, yes.
Holy cow. And tastefully censored, apparently.
Yes. When we get to that part where he's in his predicament, yes.
I can't stress this enough. This is a phenomenal page by Chris Bocciolo.
I mean, and we've said it before, this is book that's all him.
Yeah, he was born to draw this. That's insane. Exactly. My goodness. Holy cow. Yeah, so I'm thankful that you didn't spoil too much. I did flip through. I kind of get the gist that, you know, it's each issue is kind of like a one-and-done thing with a member of Doctor Strange's, what you would call his rogues gallery.
Rogues, yeah.
So that's pretty cool. I'm looking forward to reading that.
Yeah, this is another potential click of the week for me, because it was like just well done. Like I said, this book has been pretty good already, but this book has been entertaining because of how it's set up, and the art is always great in it. So you can't really, you know, you can't really sleep on it. Sure. Let's see. Okay, it looks like Tim's about to come in. This I'll see you on the dock, and I only have one more book, so we can do that real quick, because this is a pretty much a real quickie. Comic History of Comics number one. So in the tradition of Hip Hop Family Tree, whereas there is a graphic novel volume or two, and that ends up turning into a monthly comic, this is pretty much a similar thing. So if you've not read the Comic Book History of Comics, it is a book by Fred Valenti, and I can't remember who does the art, where they, as it says, go through the history of comics from the beginning to now. The difference is this one's in color and is monthly, and that original book was in black and white.
Okay.
It was a good, as a matter of fact, I was thumbing through the pages of it, because I got a copy of it, and I was thumbing through the pages to see if there was any differences to it, and to, you know, they may have, like, outside of the coloring,
moved, you know, a couple things around.
Maybe not. No, it just looks like it's pretty straightforward and similar. Like, it looks like it's just pretty much that. But I meant to see if they may have added something, because, you know, they're making it into a monthly book. They may end up adding like some extra pages or something, just to kind of you know, fluff it out a little bit. And to which they do have at the end of the book, the Dirk Gently book that's coming out.
Okay,
or that might be already out. I can't remember what it is. So, but outside of that, you don't really get that much more to it. But if you are curious about it, you know, I'd say it's a pretty good read. Like, I enjoyed what I read. I didn't finish reading the whole original book, but like what I read of it was pretty interesting and pretty, you know, illustrated, for like a better word. So
it's cool. I'm looking forward to reading this. I don't recall reading this in black and white form.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm pretty sure you used to get that book, and I can't remember how many pages it was initially. But actually, I can look real quick, but I'll do it in a second. In the meantime, we are now joined by one Tim the OGG.
Can you hear me?
Coming back from his
Yes.
in bestiality.
Oh no!
How was the movie?
It's all right.
I know you're not a big Magic or Potter fan of that.
But, neither, but
yeah,
it was decent.
That's good. I'm not familiar with the story that's behind Fantastic Beasts and where you find them.
Right, whatever anybody is, outside right. Potter fans, and even that, like, this is a pretty newer story anyway.
Right. I was about to say, I'm a pretty big Harry Potter fan. I've read all the main books, and I watched all the main movies. I even have the Blu-ray set, but I'm not familiar enough with this, so this was not on my immediate go watch this right away opening night type of thing. So,
well, then you're not a true fan, then.
Exactly. I'm just fronting. I'm pretending. So hopefully, at some point, I'll be able to catch this and see what's up with that. But yeah.
Every time I have seen the title of that movie, I keep calling it Fantastic Beats.
Beats Padre.
That's yeah, right.
That's like, hey, and speaking of Fantastic Beats, that new Tribe album is pretty damn good.
But yeah. Anyway. Yeah. I definitely copped that opening day.
Yeah. Totally.
Does the camera pan on me when I speak?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay. It's not, not doing it for me on my end, but this first time in a while not hosting a show, so I don't know if it's...
Feels strange, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, this
is... I was like, how's the Clint Nation logo and my regular avatar on up here on the same time?
Listen, this is a first, I think, for us, where we've kind of had hosts coming in and out of the show as we've gone along.
So Dirt did show up?
Yeah. Dirt was here. Yeah.
Okay.
He popped out about half an hour ago.
Cool. So. Right, and I came on like about 15 minutes before he left. So
it worked out.
It's a fluid situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
no, I love it when plan comes together, Chomp.
Exactly. We are, I was about to say, we are like Bruce Lee, we are like water. We are being like water.
I was so we were like boards. We don't hit back.
Where do we leave off?
So what?
Where do we leave off?
So the last book we did was Doctor Strange.
Right. We are in Marvel, but if you have DC stuff you want to talk about, feel free.
Matter of fact, this whole section is pretty much all you because we have exhausted most of our books.
Yeah, I've only got one book myself left.
And the only books that we've done that you've talked about was the DC stuff.
Okay. Batman 11.
Mm-hmm.
Traitor in the Midst. Man. I like the art. Tom King seemed like he was channeling Brian Michael Bendis in this issue. Very wordy, and I don't know how to feel about his Batman run so far. Either the issues are very wordy, or they're like regular dialogue, but then he has characters just repeating themselves over and over again.
Or they're fighting kaiju.
Yeah, actually, the kaiju issues actually
were the interesting ones.
Yeah, and even that storyline I wasn't that crazy about.
Yeah.
Trinity number 3, it was cool. There's something going on with I think it's Mogul and
is it Mongol?
Poison Mongol, okay. Is that who it is? Yeah. Mongol and Poison Ivy, I believe, are the ones pulling the strings. Each issue so far has taken a flashback to one of the Trinity's early experiences.
Now, see, when me and Doug were talking about that, I was kind of wondering about that because all we've seen so far is Poison Ivy, and I thought we saw like a Starro or whatever that I said Starro, and I know that's not the right one, but whatever that was that Mongo used on Superman during the man who has everything.
Yeah, I think Mongo showed up in the Rebirth issue, maybe, or
did he? I don't remember. Okay,
he showed up in one of the issues, like maybe the first issue, I believe. I think.
I don't
know. It's only been 3, so it's only like
right.
4 possible issues that it could have happened. Right.
But you got a sense of she wasn't working alone, even in this one. So.
And then Superman 11, very fun. The Superman and Batman sending the Boy Wonder and the Boy of Steel to boot camp to try to learn to work together. It kind of worked, but this was the end of the arc, so just a quick 2-issue story arc, and I forget what the next story arc is supposed to be about, but this should kickstart the Super Sons series that Peter Tomasi is also writing. So,
all right,
okay.
And you said for Marvel,
we have done Doctor Strange, Black Panther, Captain America, Sam Wilson. Which did you read that?
No.
Oh man, you should read that. Get a kick out of it.
It's a couple of things I didn't get to this week that I diversified my bonds this week. I got some DC, some Marvel, some Valiant, some Image.
Oh, we also talked about Aquaman. So I don't know if you don't have it on here, but
probably not being Aquaman. Y'all talk about Thanos?
Not yet.
I did not read it yet. Try not to spoil too much, but this was the lone hip hop cover that was out this week, so I did pick this up.
It's good. I like it.
Good.
Yeah, and okay. So can't really spoil much or talk about much, but it's Thanos has went back home, so to speak, to reclaim his throne.
So Titan?
Or reclaim his turf.
Uh-huh.
Not Titan yet. Some other, like, part of the cosmos he had claimed for himself until he decided to go play with the humans on Earth. And we see Star Fox and some dude who reminds me of Lobo. And as a matter of fact, I was going to ask if any of y'all had heard of this character before.
I'm going to thumb through it real quick.
Who's it, the champion of the universe?
Yeah, that guy.
He's a long time. He's a long time. I flipped through this when I picked that up. He's a long time Marvel Cosmic character. He was one of the original Elders of the Universe.
Right.
Is that what it was?
I believe that is the case.
And the runner and like the original wielders of the Infinity Gems, the Infinity Stones, Infinity Gems. He used to hold the Power Gem.
Yeah.
So I figure he was a character dug up out of the archives.
Although this looks like a slightly younger version of that character, and I can see what you're saying about looking like Lobo.
Yeah, it's the way he talked about himself.
Mm-hmm. That was pretty much his thing. So,
okay, humans. Oh yeah, Thane was referenced, and I guess you actually do see Thane. Yeah, I'm kind of curious to delve into this part of the Marvel cosmic, just because I don't know much about Thanos' background, besides, you know, him being involved with death, like, you know, Star Fox, and then this champion, the champion of the world person, and I guess Gamora and Nebula, all the Thanos family tree is supposed to be here.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff kind of came through in old runs of Avengers and various events throughout that time.
And Uncanny Humans was fun just because they're done dealing with Civil War II.
Which is what we can't say about a few other books that we've already talked about. So,
but you said y'all were done with y'all books, or
I've got one left,
pretty much. Yeah,
okay.
I've just got the one left. I'll get it out of the way now. What I read I've got two. I just jotted down one just now. But let me cover the last Marvel book I had, which was Uncanny X-Men Annual Number 1. And the reason why I read this is because I saw, I think, a story on CBR. Shout out to TimDog98.
Yeah.
Of that reference this particular issue and what might be some foretelling, some foreshadowing of what Resurrection might be about, or might contain some elements of Resurrection might have been foreshadowed here. So if you're interested in finding out what, or at least a tease of what might be down the, what might be in store for the mutants of the Marvel Universe down the road, take a read at Uncanny X-Men Annual Number 1. Ken Lashley's art is cool because it's such a great throwback to like the Jim Lee style from the 90s.
So I need to read this then.
I don't know if you need to, but I think you should.
Yeah, I've kind of fallen behind on the X-Men books. Extraordinary. I was reading Extraordinary X-Men and I've fallen off of that, and I was kind of keen up with Uncanny X-Men, at least through the Apocalypse Wars, and I can't remember if I finished the last part of that or not.
I honestly couldn't tell you what happened in any of those books for the last, like, maybe three issues.
And then All New X-Men, I only read the first part of its Apocalypse War tie-in, and I don't know.
Yeah, I dropped that.
I'm gonna dive back into it heavy with Resurrection.
Probably. That's probably advisable.
All the new books and the hope that they're bringing back into the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
My last book was Reborn Number 2 from Image Comics. So this is Mark Millar and Greg Capullo launching this. I'm assuming it's a miniseries because all the Millar World books are miniseries. It's about a woman who dies, and when she dies, you find out that, you know, you don't go to heaven and hell. You go to like this magical place where you're like reborn. Hence the title.
Okay.
And she she reunites with her father and her pet, and it's when you're reborn, you don't know like what part or what age you'll be reborn as. Like her father's like sort of, I mean, he's, you know, an adult. She's in like her 20s, I think. Her pet dog is like this big monstrous like wolf type, you know, a companion. And so her dad is sort of giving her the lay of the land. She's like you know, the chosen one that's supposed to help them defeat this, whoever the guy is that's ruling the Dark Realm, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband had passed away also, you know, like years ago. She wants to reunite with him. So instead of going straight and battling the evil group, she convinces her father to help her track down her husband, because the pets are like trackers. They can find their loved ones from back, you know, when they were alive. So they're going to try to use the wolf creature to track down her husband. Of course, it'll probably be revealed that her husband is with the evil people. It looks very like that's the route they'll go down. Very obvious, mm-hmm. but remains to be seen. But if you're a fan of Capullo's art, it's gorgeous. There's like, you know, splash pages and double page spreads of like the reborn world, and there's a great like architecture and forestry, just very detailed. So it's a fun book, and it's actually probably going to be my click of the week this week.
Nice.
Oh, and Harbinger Renegades number one from Valiant. So this is going to like lead into their big 2017 event, Harbinger Wars 2. This prologue comes first, right? Prologue and epilogue.
Yes,
right. Yeah. Prologue starts off with like a quick story of this, introducing this new character who's sort of like a rival of Toyo Harada, who has been like the big bad in the Valiant universe over the last like 5 years or whatever. Right. So they sort of like introduce him, and then it gets to the main story of after the original Harbinger Wars, and like all the Psyots, who are basically think of them like Inhumans or mutants. Mm-hmm. They can have their powers activated after this team group was battling Harada. They exposed like all their secrets onto the interwebs, so like they've gone public now, and there's like groups trying to recruit Psyots to activate them using like underground methods that ends up like killing them. And then so like members of the old Harbinger gang feel guilty about secrets out there, because basically anyone that had the potential to be a Psyot, like their information's out for public knowledge now, so that they feel guilty about, you know, putting them out there. So they're trying to convince the members of the team are trying to convince others to, you know, reform the group to help everyone out. Except they need Peter Stanchek, who was the leader of the Harbingers, except he's up in space meditating and growing a big hippie long hair and beard. So it ends with them, with him, so like an image of him in space, and of course he'll have to get involved. So it's basically a typical recruiting, you know, the band's got to get back together to do good type of story is how it sort of begins.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how it goes into the new year and into their summer event for 2017.
Okay.
All right. I'm done.
All right. So my last book, I'm actually going to cheat a little bit and go to the Boom Studios solicit information on this. The last book I read through, admittedly very quickly, was Slam Number One.
Okay.
Exactly. I was like, where's Onyx? Where is Onyx? Make noise, be boys. That's what I'm saying. So no, in all seriousness, that I kind of half expected to see you know, back the bleep up on this cover, but instead what I got was Roller Derby. And it was actually a pretty interesting issue because there were a lot of some of the page layouts were unique and were kind of reminiscent of what they were doing in the Mockingbird series, where they would take, you know, full pages to kind of introduce characters and give like kind of semi-official handbook of the Marvel Universe backgrounds to them in the midst of the story. But essentially, the story is about two friends who get into roller derby and find that they've been drafted by two very different teams in the roller derby league, and they have to figure out how their friendship is going to withstand beating the holy hell out of each other on the roller derby track. So that's what this is about. And other than my disappointment at not seeing Sticky Fingers in this book, it was actually a pretty good read. So if you're looking for something different off the beaten track, or at least off the superhero track, you may want to give this a try. It's pretty interesting.
Cool.
Nice. Tim, did you actually read Doctor Strange? You said you were going to.
I read Uncanny Inhumans instead.
Oh, okay.
Because that was the last thing I read before I went to sleep last night. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to fully enjoy Doctor Strange. So since I was like half sleepy, I was like, yeah, Uncanny Inhumans, I'll flip through that very quickly.
Gotcha.
Gotcha. Well, I guess then if we have nothing else, we are at the point where we can do some quicker rapid fires. Or I guess we're pretty much done. You still have like one more.
Did you talk about Uncanny Inhumans already? You did with No Civil War.
I think you still got one more.
What's that?
I
do.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if it's worth mentioning that, but
what, Infamous Iron Man?
Yeah.
It was all right.
Oh man, not the most ringing endorsement there.
I know, right?
Yeah. I mean, Doom is still stalking Gamora. Thing is looking for Doom. He's in Latveria accosting people.
Jeez.
I guess that's the best way to say it. Mm-hmm. And then he shows up at the end and catches them two together, and they probably fight next issue. They'll talk a lot next issue. Because it's been this. Alex Maleev. I'm not sure if I'm not the biggest Maleev fan, I don't think.
It depends on. It really does depend on what kind of look they're trying to get at. And I did flip through this very quickly, and I'm inclined to agree with you.
For a superhero book, like if he was doing like something street level, mm-hmm. I think it would work fine.
Something more noir.
Yeah, but for this, it's even like back to the international Iron Man. I wasn't crazy about his art there. But I liked it in the Star Wars book he did. The Lando book.
Mm-hmm.
Seemed fine there.
So. Well, yeah, because that kind of lends itself to his style, so.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Cool. Well, if we have nothing else, Clicks of the Week!
Clicks of the Week! Mine is Reborn number 2.
Mm-hmm. And I believe Dirt has already said Cave Carson has a cybernetic eye number 2.
Mm-hmm.
This is. I think I am going to go with my original thought with Black Panther number 8.
And that leaves me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm considering backing you up on the Black Panther, but I think the most fun I had this week, and I know I expressed this when I was doing the review, was reading Amazing Spider-Man number 21. And I think I'm going to go with that because I think, if you are getting on this clone conspiracy train, get on now and try to catch up.
Well, alrighty then. Serve us up an ad, please, sir.
You got it. So, let me tell you about Skull Candy. Skull Candy makes the best headphones, earbuds, and gaming headsets, all with lifetime warranties. Skull Candy produces many types of audio accessories, including headphones, sports earbuds, Xbox gaming headsets, PlayStation gaming headsets, DJ headphones, iPod headphones, and MP3 headphones. And now, for the listeners of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles, Skull Candy offers free standard shipping on your order. To help keep our podcast free, order from Skull Candy by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Skull Candy banner, and then shop for high-quality audio accessories with free standard shipping. Skull Candy Audio through cspn.us. Do it today.
And now we roll on into the cinematic news portion of the show, which we will breeze through relatively quickly because there's not really that much on the news front, or at least that dude who does the news didn't put a whole lot into the show.
You got it.
So it's,
I say you can roll with this one.
Sure.
You've been hosting the show.
I guess so. Jessica Chastain to star in and produce Painkiller Jane. So this is another attempt to get a Painkiller Jane project off the ground. I believe there has been a couple already. I know there was a TV show, if I'm not mistaken, but hey,
I don't recall.
I believe so. I remember seeing something about it. It was either there was a movie or another TV show that was real short-lived. I can't remember, but I know there's been a couple times that this character has been on TV, so. Don't know where or when that's going to happen, but there it is. Let's see. Supergirl joins greatest team up ever in Invasion crossover promo. So, if you've been watching the CW DC shows, you have probably seen either this promo or one of the other ones that are kind of coming into the forthcoming Fortnite crossover. Good gracious, that's going to apparently start with Supergirl on the 28th. I don't think I've seen this particular one. It might be the same one I've seen. I don't know, but it's coming for you, like it or not.
Right.
And we get, and speaking of trailers, we get another clip of the Justice League action show from Cartoon Network. I didn't watch this. I had intended to, and I don't know why I didn't. But apparently this one is going for a little bit more for laughs this roundabout.
Or yeah, it's going to be more kiddie.
Yeah. Justice League dark cover artwork and release date has been revealed, as well as a trailer, which actually I did watch this. It looks actually pretty decent. Let's see. It is going to premiere digitally on January 24th. We get the box cover art, and if you've watched the trailer, you'll see the box cover art at the end of it. It's, you know, it's Batman and Justice League Dark. So if you haven't checked it out, do so. Let's see. Marvel's Cloak and Dagger TV series pushed back to 2018.
But if you think about it, guys, seriously, before hold that thought. Is 2018 really that far away now? Isn't that sad?
It is not, but it's my thing not. Was, so we've talked about in the past about it, this Cloak and Dagger thing happening, and I think my thought is still the same as it was then. Well, partially why, but
why not?
Yeah, and then and that was pretty much the answer to it. but and I think it does say why they're having what was the reason for the pushback, because I think they had to rewrite some stuff or whatever the case. Yeah, matter of fact, yeah, they I think they got a new showrunner and they're rewriting the script for the series, because they're basically reworking some things. And this is the animated show that is going to be going on. So I'm guessing, because have they not, I don't know, I haven't been keeping up with this, that they showed up on Spider-Man, correct?
Yeah, Ultimate Spider-Man. Does anybody know? Yes, Ultimate Spider-Man, the cartoon? Yeah.
Right. So I assume people enjoyed them there, and that's why they got this outside of that. But, hey, I mean, 2018, check it. But speaking of series that is forthcoming, this kind of came out of slightly nowhere. Marvel announces Inhumans series on ABC. So ending that the Inhumans were slated to have a movie in the cinematic universe, but that got scrapped, and they said that, it could possibly get put back on the lineup. But apparently the case is now we have a TV show that is coming. And not only that, but you can see the first issue, the first couple of episodes looks like an IMAX when it happens.
Mm-hmm. And supposedly, I guess, like, IMAX is going to help, like, produce the series. So it's going to have, like, even when it's on ABC, I think it's going to have sort of, like, great special effects. Which for that type of series.
Probably be in 4K, which no one can see. Nobody has a 4K TV or whatever the case may be. But,
could this possibly replace Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the future?
It's definitely replacing Agent Carter.
Well, I don't know, because that other show of hers seems like it might be on the block.
Well, it's already canceled.
Oh, is it?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they've been talking about it.
They cut the episode order, and it's already not going to make it through its entire run.
Sorry.
So there was a good chance that Agent Carter could be back.
That's right. I did not know that. What at Matt Wang 97 and I were discussing. Yes, even at a social gathering with lots of friends, we're still talking about Comic Chronicle stuff. what we're talking about is how, at least in my opinion, I think this is for the best for the Inhumans characters, because what they would not have, which what the Avengers had, was a slow burn developing the royal family. Introducing all these characters in one movie would have proven to be a very tough, a tall task, and may have produced like a very X-Men 1 type of vibe. Whereas over the course of the TV show, you know, it gives them room to expand and grow these characters. Matt's rebuttal to that was just use a focus group of maybe 3 or 4 Inhumans characters with one point of view character, be it a brand new Inhuman, or what I was proposing was use Crystal, who was the original point of view character. So we kind of bandied this back and forth, probably over too many glasses of wine. But, ultimately, I we didn't come to any sort of consensus, obviously. We were just discussing it. But at least in my opinion, I think this is probably for the best for the Inhumans characters.
I don't know. I kind of feel like So we now know, just as Agent 70 just said, that this is going to be focused around the Inhuman royal family, whom, you know, we all know. But I was thinking, so they had already laid Inhuman groundwork in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. game. If they were going to do something like that, use, like, say, I don't know, I don't think they were going to get rid of, like, splinter off Daisy into an Inhuman book, even though they, I guess they could very well do that, but that would be kind of losing something out of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. But at the very least, a group of Inhumans that kind of spun off of that show would be the focus of it. I didn't think they were going to go just straight up to the royal family, which, that said, feels like they kind of shortchanged into the royal family like that. Because, you know, it seemed like they could have been big enough to get a movie with those characters, and they would have probably set it up with some stuff, you know, in the movies leading up to it, just like they've been doing with the other Marvel movies. So it's not like they couldn't have done it. But
one highlight of doing it as a TV series is it gives them enough time to flesh out, instead of just, you know, get like a 2-hour movie every 2 years type of deal.
Yeah, but hey, we'll see how that rolls out.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Valiance, Dr. Mirage pierces the veil to come to TV. So in another list of comics to TV shows, we're getting a Valiant entry. And it looks like this one is going to be based off the current series. And it is going to be developed by DMG Entertainment and CBS Studios, and going to be on the CW. Yep, that is the case. So, which, you know what? CW has got their niche now. This looks to be it.
TV comic book adaptations.
Yep, which we will get to another one in a quick second. Kung Fu Panda director Mark Osborn is adapting cult comic Bone series Bone to... wait, does it say is it TV? Or is it a movie? It's a series. So, there you go. It's
an animated series, right? I would presume so.
Plans for a film adaptation has been in place from... It doesn't necessarily say, but you would think so.
Yeah.
And we don't have a release date for it. But yeah, I can't imagine seeing that one in live action. That much about Bone. Mm-hmm. Outside of hearing about it every now and then. Cole Sprouse's new CW show, Riverdale, officially has a premiere date. So this is what I was alluding to just a second ago. Thursday, January 26th at 9 p.m., which pushes Supernatural to Thursdays. Why is that show still on the air? Don't hate me, those people who love that show, but whatever. Pushes Supernatural to Thursdays at 8 p.m.
All hate mail can be sent to
you. Do it. I don't care. I don't watch the damn show. And I don't know. I don't know. Everything I heard about this show seems now known to an old-ish, including the fact that, you know, hey, there has a 90210 character playing the dead, whose name is escaping me right now for some reason. I don't know. The girl that plays Josie looks cute, so I'll check it out for that. But that is it for the cinematic news. Let's see. We'll move down to the book news. Top Marvel artists, and I say more than one, pledged to not to visit U.S. states that voted for Trump. So first we have an article that says Roberto Ramos, you know, said on Facebook, says that, you know, he's not going to go to any Trump voting states because of principles, which, you know, good on him for that. We also learned that George Perez has also joined in the boycotts after at least some of the ones that he has scheduled at this point.
Mm-hmm. To do that. And then Mark Waid came out and said that he'd go to states, but try to, like, I guess, give back to, like, communities and whatnot, I think. I think I saw some other creators said some things similar to that.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, hey, good on him for taking a stand. This one probably should have been in clickbait, but whatever, I have it here now because I didn't have much else. Stanley clears Dr. Doom's name. He's no villain. So in an interview that Lee had with apparently I think it was at a children's hospital or something. I believe so. Yes, he was talking to a fan, and it was on a radio show, I guess. He basically said that Dr. Doom is not as much of a villain as people think he is, and it kind of goes through. The interview is in the article. You can check that out in the show notes. I thought it was kind of interesting that he said that, and I guess there's a case for it. I mean, you know, maybe. I mean, granted, we all know that Dr. Doom has done some real bad shit, but... Yeah.
He's always been like the slightly more sympathetic villain until they really did. Yeah. No, what I was about to say, I think, speaking of Mark Waid, Oh, what was that storyline called? Do you remember that when, before Mike Wieringo passed away? Was it Unthinkable?
No.
Do you guys remember that? Where Doom basically created magic armor for himself?
Wait, was it like Books of Doom or?
No, it wasn't Books of Doom. It was within the Fantastic Four series. I believe it was called Unthinkable, and what ended up happening is that Doom did something that was unthinkable, and basically this is when he used magic to scar Reed Richards' side of his face. Do you guys remember that?
No.
Okay. It's all right. It was definitely before
the show. You were the Fantastic Four expert here, so.
Yeah, exactly. So I would be the one that would know. But, yeah. In any event, Doom has always been kind of a sympathetic villain. So, kind of.
Yeah, and I guess with his turn now as Iron Man, we'll see how that plays out.
I'm done with this.
Almost. The Return of Darth Maul comes in February 2017. So,
I'm sorry.
You know what? That totally would have been appropriate if we had thrown that in here. So come February, Darth Maul is getting a limited series, just like a whole bunch of other characters. And I shouldn't say that, that's actually a little hyperbole. In the Star Wars universe, Cullen Bunn and Luke Ross will be the team behind it. And it's a looks
miniseries.
Like,
miniseries, right?
Yes, it's a limited series. Mm-hmm. Apparently, this will take place in his apprentice years, looks like. Look out for that. So I guess it'll be more like that. It's not. Let me not say that. Because I was about to say, it might have been like the Kanan book, but we don't know what's going on with it. So outside of what it says, but the solicits there. Last but not least, Congressman John Lewis's, well, not last, actually, that's not last, I'll take that back. Congressman John Lewis's March book wins National Book Award for Young People's Literature.
Congrats.
Big up to Congressman Lewis.
Exactly. I'm thinking about giving those books as Christmas presents and helping the people that...
I already gave a set as a present to a family member, so... I definitely agree with that.
The people that are going to get it won't be watching this.
Oh, no, I gave it already.
No, I'm talking about for
you. That's all right. Yeah. They're not going to figure out it's books when they finally get them, right? That's a big chunk of three volumes right there.
Indeed. Yeah, I need to actually finish reading them myself. So, last couple of bits of news we have are... Well, so I guess this one came from Matt, I believe. So there is a Run of Jewels... variant cover for the Doctor Strange Punisher comic that Midtown Comics is that has, you know, I noticed in the comments here that, which I'm kind of have the sentiment myself that the Run of Jewels, as much as I do like them, the whole thing of them being on covers or that being on the cover is kind of being played, just starting to be, although if they're going to do one, this would probably be the best one to do it with.
Yeah.
So,
and they've gained, you know, I was about to say they've really boosted their, you know, given how active Killer Mike is politically, they've really boosted their visibility. So while I didn't know who they were when they did the Run the Jewels covers, I know who they are now.
Yeah, you kind of can't help it at this point. And right. I think they are in, I believe they have music in the Watch Dogs 2 game that just recently came out, if you are a video game fan. But last but not least, something's wrong with this cover for U.S. Avengers, and I can't quite put my finger on it. So I'm going to put this up here. Maybe you can figure it out, at least. For those not watching the video part of this, we have Captain Britain, who has nothing to do. Well, he has nothing to do with U.S. Avengers. But basically, this article is about the various... covers that they're given, and they mention, you know, given that the premise of U.S. Avengers is supposed to be U.S.-centric, but they have this cover for Captain Britain, who's going to go out somewhere, and that the fact that all the covers have been kind of random to which states that they're going to. They also have this Deadpool cover, who's supposed to be the Avenger of Canada, which, you know, out of all the Canadian superheroes we have, that's the one they pick.
Okay. Sure. I think that's very much tongue in cheek.
Yeah, totally. Honest. Totally. But it's just like, yeah, sure. That's funny. But I mean, at the same time, but he is the most visible Canadian.
Yeah, at this time.
Even if it wasn't.
Yeah, even at if this time it is, yeah.
Yeah, that was the case. So, and that is it for the news.
I'll pull up a tried and true ad read. Keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit cspn.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, etc. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps us keep the Click Nation Comic Book Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through CSPN.us. Do it today.
And as we come to the close of the show, I would like to thank everybody for coming out. I would like to thank my co-host for popping in and out.
Thanks, Roddy, for holding it down. And thanks for reminding me to take out the shield and show that our fight for freedom, I hate to quote G.I. Joe, but our fight for freedom is never ending. And our fight to defend the dream for everyone is always ongoing and is getting harder, but still needs to be fought.
Indeed. And speaking of, G.I. Joe Revolution did come out this week, which I didn't have a chance to read. So I guess I'll get to that a little later. But on that note,
follow us on our individual Twitter accounts.
Ah, Tim knows.
You know what, Tim? Go for it. Do it.
Close it out, Tim.
You can follow me on at TimDOGG98 and at CBCron. Our host, Roddy Cat, is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. Agent 70 is at Agent underscore 70 on Twitter and Instagram. And Dirt is at PCN underscore Dirt on Twitter. And go to popculturenetwork.com.
And he also has a new Instagram, which he's mentioned earlier, that I can't remember the name of right now.
It's like Graham something. Like
Graham Reviews or something like that?
Yeah, Graham Reviews, something like that.
We'll get it right next time, Dirt. Sorry.
It is, hold on. It's Graham Comic Reviews.
Ah, Graham Comic Reviews on Instagram.
I have to remember to put that in the show notes.
So with that, we'll be taking next week off because it's Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Enjoy time with your family, friends.
Get you some turkey. Grab up some of that petty cobbler. I guess that's what they're calling it. I don't know. Whatever else you partake of.
Yep. And we'll be back in 2 weeks.
You got it. And we'll be back with, is that going to be, whatchamacallit, Star Wars?
That's on the 16th, so it'll be...
Okay, so a week after.
Or the 16th or the 6th.
16th.
Okay,
just checking. Because that's something something that Matt Wang also mentioned to me. You got to take a look at the calendar to try to figure that one out, because if it's on a Thursday night again, that's going to get in the way, so...
Totally going to be there.
Yeah, we're good.
All right.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago.
All right.
We are the Comic Chronicles, and we are...
Oh, come on! Everybody just sign off at once.
Bring it on.
Bring it home.
And with that, we are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are gone.
Yay! Bye.